Yeah, thank you. I will speak about fermion condensation and how we can see its features in heavy fermion metals, in physics of heavy fermion metals. I would like to start with heavy electron liquid and get rid of lattice and so on, because I would like to see what is the main feature. If we can explain some experimental facts or some physics of heavy fermion metals within the framework of heavy electron liquid, then we can at least distinguish the role of lattice from the role of heavy electron liquid. So I start with a standard thermoliquid theory due to Landau, and I would like to present the Landau equation for effective mass to start with it. It's a well-known equation which relates effective mass with bare mass. This is Landau amplitude. This is a quasi-particle distribution function. This is a rather simple equation, and this is Landau amplitude. This term comes from differentiation with respect to p. In fact, it chooses the p harmonic of this amplitude. And np is a quasi-particle distribution function, which in normal Fermi liquid can be presented as follows. It is a step function. It is unit. It is Fermi momentum, and it is momentum. It's very well-known results due to Landau theory. If we would differentiate, then we get here delta function minus 1, and as a result, we obtain a simple equation for the effective mass, which reads as follows. The Landau amplitude calculated as the Fermi surface over 3. This is density of state of non-interacting electron gas, and the main result which we can see from this equation is that if Landau amplitude is positive and sufficiently strong, the effective mass tends to infinity. It's quite a general result, and this result can be obtained also in direct calculations of electron liquid. For instance, we calculated this effective mass within the density functional theory. Other plotters calculated within Green functions methods. And now it is a rather well accepted result that the effective mass of electron liquid can diverge at some point of when density tends to some critical point, because in Fermi liquid theory we have that Pf is related to the density of system. Therefore, we can safely here write down the density of system, and I guess you cannot see because of the screen. No. Therefore, we are dealing with quantum phase transition, because the effective mass can diverge only at zero temperature. Otherwise, we should use well-known Fermi-Dirac distribution, and there is no infinite effective mass. Therefore, the driving force is the density of the system. So let us consider a heavy electron liquid in the vicinity of this point where effective mass tends to infinity. But before this point, when the system only approaches this point. In that case, we can...
Can I just question you on your philosophy? Because you said at the beginning you want to remove the lattice and just talk about the electron fluid. Is the idea nevertheless that you're thinking about the electron fluid inside some kind of Brouwer zone? Or do you really think that these properties would occur for a free electron? For an interacting but totally homogeneous electron gas in the absence of a lattice?
Yes, homogeneous electron gas jelly model, for instance, when the positive positive charge compensates negative charge of electrons.
But would you require interactions that are different to that produced by a regular jelly model?
I guess it will go this Coulomb interaction. If we use Coulomb interaction, it's quite possible to show that in calculations the effective mass really diverges at some point. It was done, for instance, recently Dasarna and other people, while we have calculated it in early 90s with the same result, that at some point the effective mass diverges.
Low densities, is that right?
I mean, yes, of course, low density.
How big an RS?
Yes. For instance, if we would consider helium-3 two-dimensional system, then the effective mass would diverge at high density. The main idea that the potential energy is much bigger than the kinetic energy. In that case, it dominates the system.
And if effective, you ask what the RS would be for an electron gas.
RS in simple model, two-dimensional, it's about 8 RS, yes. And three-dimensional system, it is about 20 or 25 something. Because, of course, there are no reliable calculations because you should use some approximations. It is a strongly interacting system, and therefore there is no reliable theoretical methods.
What kind of phase of quantum phase transition does one imagine is taking place at these critical?
No, I will speak about later. Yes, but now I am going to consider the case when the system approaches this state.
Just let me remark rather precise quantum Monte Carlo calculations, which are very large.
Or as well,
for
the
signal calculation.
Yes,
and for all the transitions.
Yes. Yes, but in fact, Monte Carlo calculations cannot deal with excitations, and they cannot calculate effective mass because they should calculate some kind of excitations and then to extract from them effective mass. Therefore, in fact, this transition phase takes place before the Wigner crystal sets in the system. But Monte Carlo calculations are not reliable in the case of calculating effective mass. So let us consider the behavior of system when when the magnetic field is applied. It's convenient to recast this equation in follow form. Instead of M and P, I use which is, in fact, is the difference between quasi-particle distribution function minus plus the same thing. In that case, I can write, instead of this, such an equation. Thank you. plus the same term times I simply insert this expression here, and therefore this bare mass is replaced by the effective mass in the absence of magnetic fields or at temperature zero. And as a result,
that's the momentum derivative of delta m.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if we would deal with a simple metal, in the case when effective mass is not big, about say 5 of bare effective mass or 1 and so on, in that case obviously this term is extremely small with respect to this term, and we have ordinary Landau behavior of the effective mass. That means that, for instance, corrections to effective mass which come from the application of magnetic field will be as follows. Plus, and the same if the temperature is finite. But the situation changes very seriously if this term tends to zero. Then we have to deal with a homogeneous equation. And in this, yeah?
This magnetic field, this coupling to the fermion is Zeeman coupling, or
yes,
coupling?
Yes, Zeeman. Yes, I mean, first of all, Zeeman, because the magnetic field is not very strong to take into account, for instance, orbital couplings. Therefore, the only result of the application of magnetic fields is that the Fermi surface will be splitted. No. So the situation becomes different as soon as effective mass tends to infinity. In this case, this term vanishing, and we have to deal with a uniform equation. And in this case, the effective mass obviously starts to depend on external magnetic field and temperature. It comes here. The effective mass, this guy depends on the magnetic, on the effective mass, because the single particle spectrum depends on it. Therefore, it is a uniform equation, and we can qualitatively solve this equation in the case, for instance, magnetic field. In that case, due to Zeeman splitting, we have two Fermi surfaces, and they split so that we have two Fermi surfaces, and this delta P is about and this is Bohr magneton. Therefore, you see that splitting is proportional to magnetic field, but because one part goes up and another part of the Fermi surface goes down, they don't contribute to this term. And we will deal only with the second order, because approximately, if we integrate this function, this splitting, there we should get only the second order. As a result, we obtain such an equation. And this equation defines the behavior of effective mass in the presence of magnetic field. And obviously, it is not very difficult to solve this equation, and we obtain that it behaves as such a power of magnetic field. The main reason is that this term does not anymore define the solutions of this equation. Instead, we have to consider Well, this term and this term are the main terms, and in fact we are dealing with uniform equations. And as a result, we see that effective mass, in contrast to Landau theory, now strongly depends on magnetic field.
If the
effective mass is infinite, yes, there is a singularity. But if the effective mass, we cannot get exactly in this point. Somewhere, system.
Would this hold to be larger than the Fermi energy of the gas? Does the Zeeman energy have to be comparable with the Fermi energy of the gas for this to hold true?
No, because in fact, magnetic field is weak, and therefore the splitting is not too large, of course.
You still have to work in a limit where you can ignore the first term.
Yeah.
Sorry?
You have to work in a limit where you can ignore the first term.
Oh.
So I think he's right?
If this term is finite, in that case, of course, if the effective mass coming from this relation is larger than this one, we should use this term, obviously. Otherwise, if this term is smaller than this one, we have used this expression. And obviously, as soon as we come near point, then this term start to work at lower magnetic field.
Is the statement that the beta 4 terms are identically zero?
No, it is not very important that it should be identically zero. It must.
But it's to hold, you have to, in the regime you're talking about, surely the quartic terms and the higher terms have to be neglected.
Yes, of course, because high terms will be smaller than this one. This is leading term in that case.
Well, it depends on what the numerators are. It's B over some scale. And I'm asking you what that scale is.
Yes, of course, but this is becomes, because linear term is absent, then we have these terms. And so on. And there is, of course, this term must be much bigger than this one, and so on. We have to use only the main term in this case. I will explain this in more details when we come to the temperature. I'll explain all the reasons in that case, how the system can differentiate both of these regimes.
Jessica, you're using dimensionless notation, and I'd like you to, I don't know, but for me, you have to put the dimensions in.
Dimensions?
So, in your expressions here, you've used dimensions. What do you mean by B? You're saying B over some scale. What is that scale?
This scale is given, this is magnetic field and Bohr.
And on the left hand side, what is delta P?
And delta P is the splitting of Fermi zephyrs.
But that, in turn, is proportional to B.
Exactly.
Yes.
So how can I
put a linear order?
Drops out because this integral, there will be part which comes from, this is Fermi zephyrs original. The first term comes from this term, and another from this, and they have different signs.
So but if I asked you to, I know that physicists love to set H bar equal to 1 and everything else, but could, if I asked you to restore your dimensions momentarily, could you do that in these equations? Can you tell us what B over what scale?
The scale is B is given by this equation.
No, but B goes out of both sides of that equation. We just heard it, B small. You still haven't answered the question.
No, the linear B term doesn't contribute to charge density. It only contributes to magnetization. So the first thing that contributes to charge density is a B squared term.
Yeah.
Right?
Is what you're saying, if M star is equal to infinity at zero field, then
no, not
theory, just a second, as B goes to zero, it diverges as B one of the
Yes,
two
that's
the way to put it.
That's
the standard.
Yeah.
We have That means that the Fermi, the splitting of the Fermi Cephers is not too big. It determines the value of the B, of the magnetic field. And therefore, this series, of course, converges. If the field is extremely big, so everything is smashed by magnetic fields.
So is it the ratio of B to the magnetization? I'm just having the hardest time you to be clean on this. Can you just tell me?
Is it the ratio of B,
is the ratio of B to what scale? It's not an unreasonable question.
Yeah, I see. Delta.
But delta P, what determines delta P?
Okay. And in that case, this, and we should, yeah.
Presumably
that
bare mass.
Bare mass should be here. And in that case, if it's term is small, then we can deal with such a behavior. And,
now we recompute delta P self-consistently as a function of B.
Yes, of course. We can, for instance, use, because this is a second derivative of the Landau amplitude, while the first derivative defines single particle spectrum and the minimal value of the energy. We have a complete set of equations. But I'm now interested in explaining, in explanation of qualitative behavior of the system. What kind of solutions we can expect in this case. And of course now we have to see the behavior system in finite,
I guess I don't know whether I speak to the rest of the audience here, but the expansion in powers of B squared is like an expansion in powers of T squared. It's a sort of expansion that works only when B is very small, and yet you seem to be using it in regions where B is very large, and I don't know, I can't, whether I can speak for the rest of the audience, you might want to follow them. But I don't understand how this relationship here can hold with the first term neglected, whenever M starts.
I'm not neglecting. The term is neglected because it does not contribute to the this equation.
For me, it's not so much the B squared. I think that makes sense. But this is like, do you have any insight into why it goes like M star squared? Because that determines your the structure of that equation. If I had some insight, B squared is almost the first term.
And nobody knew?
No one knew. switch over there and not burn on.
So the scale is given by this relation.
No, but I'm asking the question. I think myself, I have no problem with the fact that it's still calling the B squared.
He thought
that makes sense because the B went up, was integrated out. So you just got the B squared back.
Yes.
But why is it going like M star squared? Is there a physical argument?
Physical argument because of the splitting is proportional to M star. Because when you apply magnetic field, you have two new Fermi Cephers with corresponding spin up and spin down, while the chemical potential obviously should be equal. And therefore, if magnetic field applied to spin up, then the difference between this proportional to kinetic energy should be compensated by magnetic field. Therefore, yeah. And now, of course, it is very important to see how the temperature influences on this behavior, because temperature smooths out the Fermi Cephers. And so I'm going to consider the influence of temperature. As we see, even if the system was placed at the point where the effective mass is extremely large, if the magnetic field is applied, in that case we should consider the effective mass as a finite in that case. So I'm going to consider qualitative solutions of this equation when the effective mass is finite. And now, again, we can expand this term because it is a simple Fermi integral. This is delta nP is function like this. This momentum and Pf, and this region is proportional to temperature. Therefore, if we would calculate this integral, there will be a series proportional to t squared and so on. So we can write down so on.
Excuse me, can I just ask a simple question? What is the dependence of the density of states on energy in this particular case? Is it
the dependency of density on what?
On energy.
On energy. The density of state is, of course, and it's proportional. Therefore, I will say about just 5 or 10 minutes later when I will be telling about fermion condensation, how the system, then the spectrum is follows. This is Fermi momentum. And this part becomes flatter and flatter as soon as we move to this region. Therefore, the density of states, of course, goes up. And because it is proportional to m star, therefore, finally we have infinite density of state. And now we can consider this behavior. If we are dealing with a normal Landau liquid, when the effective mass is not too much, is not very big, then in that case, these terms can be considered only as a correction to the effective mass at finite temperatures. Therefore,
can I ask you one question? That Bohr microliton also depends on a mass. So that mass is a bare mass, but Bohr microliton.
Why? It depends on spin. It is the energy of electron in magnetic field.
That is UB.
Mu B.
It's a bare mass.
That's a bare mass.
Yeah.
UB is a bare mass.
But if the effective mass becomes large, in this case, this term is small and the behavior is defined by this term. And again, we can, at sufficiently large temperatures, when we can neglect.
But only if that term, I think that the dimensionless ratio you have there is really T over EF star. That's the scale you've got there. M star is 1 over EF star. It's the width, the effective width of the band that you've got.
Yes.
There. And those terms can only be used provided T times N star is a small number, or if you like, T over EF star is very small. If you start to use these expressions in a region where T over EF star is not small, then the validity of the equations is in doubt.
Yes, but there is a small term, and in fact, we can introduce, to rewrite this series in some kind of TK, okay, and so on. And this TK is related to the behavior of this part of spectrum, which in fact flat. It's can be seen as a quantum temperature or, for instance, effective Fermi temperature, which characterizes the system. And in this case, we also see that effective mass as a function of temperature becomes proportional to...
I'm sorry, I don't understand the simple point. Let me understand, maybe related to Pierce. Suppose N star is very large. That's
yeah.
what we are looking at. N star is very
yeah.
large.
Yes.
Then any small b, then that splitting is huge. The Fermi surface spin up, spin down.
You should scale your magnetic field, of course, with this splitting. For instance, if the magnetic field is extremely large, there is a system when the scaling is violated. I cannot show, but I can give you a picture. I can try to draw it on the blackboard. This is this system. The behavior of this system down to the lowest temperatures and non-Fermi liquid behavior. But yes, yes. But I would like to show you what is give impression of scaling. And this is magnetic susceptibility of the system. If the magnetic field is applied, it behaves as follows. It is current, it's temperature, and this is, say, B, which in this case, and all these curves as a function of magnetic field B collapse on the single curve, and it is a temperature. But when magnetic field becomes sufficiently large, in fact, it is not very large. It is about 1 millitesla. The scaling is violated. Therefore, the splitting becomes too large for this system, and we can deal with a simple approximation that we are dealing only with Fermi splitting, Zeeman splitting. We have to take into account, for instance, in orbital coupling and so on. But I would like to attract attention that the effective mass in this case behaves as a...
I guess I'm not understanding your curve. You said it's scaled, but I don't see scale invariant axes. If something scales, then it depends on ratios of variables.
Yes, you should, for instance,
T over something else. T over what?
Chi you should divide, for instance, normalized by its value at its maximum. In that case, we have the only curve. All of them are. I can show this one.
Yes. I just wanted to know what your axes were. T over T something. And
it is
chi
a
over chi something. If it's
chi, for instance, chi at zero temperature, say. And this is a T. I will see. It's this temperature about 10 millikelvin.
Not
T divided over, for instance, the temperature of this.
Maximum.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 10 millikelvin. But when the temperature is rather high, or for instance, magnetic field is high, there is no scaling. And for this, when the magnetic field is high, the scaling vanishes, in fact. Now let us turn to...
Can we just go back to your scales? I just
yes.
want to keep beating on this, but it's important.
And
if I put in the region, if I put back in your numbers, the scale. I know you don't like to put scales in here. Mm-hmm. This says M over M0 is of order T over TK to the 2/3.
Yes.
That's what this expression says.
And to have this expression,
well,
I have...
plug that into the top expression, how big is this T to the 4th term compared to the T squared term?
Yeah.
Seems to me they're of the same order.
We should... first of all, if this term is much bigger than the second, for instance, which is... then we are dealing with Landau-Fermi liquid behavior, yes? But if this term is much bigger than... in the opposite case, when we have that this is... but nonetheless, we have to assume that the... is much smaller. TK and M than unit. In that case, we can take only this first term. Otherwise, we should consider all the series.
Yes.
But both of these equations can be satisfied simultaneously because the mass is big and they can be rewrite in such way that it is obviously. Then we are dealing with such a behavior. But then that if we consider system at elevated temperatures, then all terms come into a play. And we have a quite different behavior.
So the dimensionally small parameter is T over TK to the 1/3,
yes,
in some sense.
Yes. And at elevated temperatures, all these terms should be taken into account. And we have a so-called transition regime. In this case, we have to consider, to go back to this integral. This is a Fermi integral, and in fact, as the upper limit, it has such a term. There is two terms in this Fermi integral. First one is minus. If this term is small, and we can take first term only, then this series is composed of terms like this. That is, the power is even function of the series number. But as soon as temperature becomes sufficiently high, there is no compensation between this term and this term, and this behavior and the difference between these two integrals is proportional to temperature. And there is another transition point at this moment. And we as a result can write down at elevated temperatures such a behavior that M becomes such a function of temperature, because we have therefore at elevated temperatures or at low magnetic fields the system switches to this behavior. And therefore, obviously, if we would like to see this kind of behavior, we should to apply a high magnetic field to system to make the effective mass be small. While if it is a large or the temperature is sufficiently high, then the behavior becomes as a square root from the temperature. And of course, finally, at elevated temperatures, this spectrum will be destroyed by the temperature and the behavior should come back to Landau-Fermi liquid behavior or something else. I have no idea in this case. But in the case of a simple spectrum, we really would have a Landau thermoliquid behavior at high temperatures when this part of spectrum comes into a play.
So the same, your experiment took so is valid in 2D or 3D?
Sorry?
The experiment took so for the mass.
Yes.
Is valid in 3D or 2D?
It's valid in both cases because the dimensions does not come in explicitly. Only some phase factors and the dimension does not influence the exponent. It will determine the pre-exponential factor.
Could you explain a bit that, because it's not easy to get. I mean, usually when you have this diverging effective masses, it's very highly dependent on dimension. So you get for d equals infinity, you get that too?
I guess yes, but I'm talking about three-dimensional system, but I guess that the 2D system would
what
have...
What I mean is if usually your momentum integral also depends on g. If something diverges, like effective mass as powers of t powers of energy, and you have a relation between the phase space and energy, which is dynamic exponent. So how come you don't have a dynamic exponent here? It's totally disconnect. Usually, at least you in a thermoliquid, dynamic exponent is one. Dk was like omega.
It's main field theory.
It's main field, yes. It can.
It's supposed to be Landau thermoliquid theory.
But we will see that the main field can work here because this phase transition, in fact, the superconducting phase transition, and therefore the quasi-particle picture is valid down to smallest temperatures. But okay. I will continue, and so I have to switch.
What determines this range facility before you cross over? Mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying is I have a system where the effective mass is approaching infinity.
Yeah.
But then at some energy scale, I recover back to Fermi liquid, which is your vertical line. This is your vertical line on this epsilon versus P graph, the little vertical segment. So what determines that to that energy range?
The energy range, you...
Go to this epsilon versus P, the little vertical line segment there that determines the flat region from the non-flat region. What determines that
segment? I did not yet consider flat region. I am only approaching this flat region.
No, but the flat region is what's giving you these divergences.
Yes, but when the fermion condensation sets in, we will deal with real flat region. I'm only discussing the behavior of system when the system approaches this regime.
Sure, but my point is these divergent quantities are coming from the mini vicinity of PF. And you go back to standard t-squared and b-squared behavior when you get away from that.
Yes. As soon as effective mass of the system becomes sufficiently large, for instance, in simple metals, we have a simple Landau behavior. That is the corrections to effective mass. It is plus t squared and so on. And
so this is my point. What determines the that region?
I think we have not yet talked about at all why the effective mass at zero field and temperature would diverge, right? This is data, I suppose, right? I don't know.
I'm sorry?
we have not yet talked about why the effective mass at zero field and temperature would diverge.
Because I talked about it, but not...
Is that what you're calling TK? Is that TK is a term, is the size of that line?
TK is just...
So if the Landau amplitude is sufficiently large, of course, we have to put system at this point. That is, we should to change the density of system in that case. And if the system near this point, then the effective mass becomes extremely large, and that's all. And we can, within Landau theory, we cannot say what is the value of this density, but we can calculate it in case, for instance, a uniform electron gas when its bare mass is bare mass of electron. Then at about RS8 in three-dimensional, it is about 20. But for instance, in solid, effective mass could be sufficiently large from the very beginning. In that case, the density of system may be much bigger than RS8 or 20.
I just have a question just about the ensemble. Is it the same for the, if you have a non-canonical ensemble or just a canonical ensemble? I mean, because you have very non-linear bands, the Planck number must come to that.
Yes. But chemical potential, in that case, yes. Everything will be defined by chemical potential and the result will be the same, yes.
So it's unaffected by the change in chemical potential.
Yeah. And therefore, I can compare this behavior with that of observed in heavy fermion metals. And in fact, it's the case in many systems, such a behavior was observed in this as well as, for instance,
I don't see how you can apply the starting formula to a lattice system. That formula is derived from Galilean invariants. It depends critically on Galilean invariants. I don't know of any derivation that relates the Landau F function to M star, which doesn't depend on Galilean invariants. And you want to go for a system you want to prove your results by reference to experiment.
No, in the case of heavy electron liquid, they can be derived. And now I can see that if I'm dealing with a metal.
No. This relationship here that relates the Landau occupancy to M star depends critically on one's ability to translate the electron, to boost the electron gas, and the invariance of the equations under Galilean transformations. And so I don't think this relationship holds the basis of microscopic theory which involves a lattice. If you look at Luttinger and Ward's derivation of mm-hmm. liquid theory, it is one of the relationships they do not derive, because they don't have, in general, Galilean invariants. Oh. So the whole body of computation here is being, you're relying on the concept of the absence of a lattice, and yet you keep making references to systems which have lattices. And I think it's not really intellectually honest unless you can give us a reason why you think this starting equation will apply to a system which has no Galilean invariants.
Look, you're unfair to this guy. Look, this box thing in a Galilean invariant system is L equal 1 Landau parameter. Okay? Maybe in a lattice system L equals 0 Landau parameter, but look, he's got a box there. Anything can be inside of that, those two brackets.
And on the other hand, I'm dealing with a small momenta and small energy. Therefore, in fact, there is a conservation.
That's complete. No, that's not fair.
You're
not being blind to me. No. That's not true. The M star relationship is separate from Fermi-Liquid theory. It depends critically on Galilean invariants, and the expansion of free energy as a power of delta F doesn't depend on that. But the key relationship, the one that Mike so happily says can go inside a box, depends on the Galilean invariants.
Yes, it's a box. Okay, the Galilean invariants have boxes at L equal 1 Landau parameters. But he doesn't care for his purposes. It could be anything inside of that box.
You can use that small temperatures and small momenta. You can use Landau theory because, in fact, there is a conservation of momenta in lattice as well. And on the other hand, at low temperatures, only quasi-particle degrees of freedom contribute to thermodynamic properties of the system. Therefore, it is self-consistent in this sense system.
So what you're saying is, if you neglect the archetype process, you can apply your theory to a lattice system?
Yes, it's possible if the temperatures is low and the momenta.
I think you're claiming that you know of, and Mike also is claiming, he knows of, an approximate derivation of this of this formula, which applies in the absence, in the presence of a lattice. Is that what you're saying? I'm prepared to issue a bet here, okay, that I'll provide a nice bottle of wine to someone who presents me with a consistent derivation of that equation in the absence of, in the presence of lattice symmetry.
I'm just saying if he replaces F1 by F0, he's still getting the same kinds of equations. So I don't think the Galilean invariance thing is a technicality.
You can expand everything.
I think it's not a technicality because, you see, you have these parameters which characterize your thermodynamic relation, and the statement that in the presence of translational invariance, they are not independent. There's one relation, but that's a specialty of the translational invariant system. Otherwise, if you have that a lattice, then this additional, say, constraint doesn't hold anymore, and so the starting point isn't
true. But I mean, anything around b squared and t squared terms of your expansion, that's always assuming when you makes these argumentations.
Okay,
and that's true
squared,
for anything
but say, the relation between the mass enhancement and the interaction, that's not
any momentum.
No, it's valid in the case lattice as well, because we are dealing with small momenta, and in the case they are conserved even in the presence of lattice. You can use Bloch wave functions and everything to repeat.
Bloch wave functions, but you have one additional parameter in the parameterization of the thermodynamic, and that's an effective mass.
You see, because the Landau theory was applied many times to explain the behavior of simple metals such as sodium and other, and it was perfect with it. Yes, it is.
You might be right.
Okay, let's
me.
I have a different type of question. This formula for M star, it is derived from true FPF or presumption of the FPF diagrams. I think recently I'm doing some work on the transformation diagrams. So if you include vertex correction, I'm not sure this formula holds.
No, it's. If you would use a green function, you can repeat this formula, you can get again.
Can you come out on the last work that I'm writing on that, on the special point? I think vertex corrections are important, and it seemed to kill the divergence from my.
No, because I'm dealing with equation which, in fact, this equation is exact equation.
Zero relationship.
So M star is 1 minus F and 0 B. How do you derive it?
From the Landau permeability.
Or you can.
The sum of the loop diagram.
Yes.
That's a microscopic derivation. If the Landau permeability theory existed 15 years before those.
This derivation from lattice can be done microscopically as well. I mean, without actually relying to the Galilean invariance, that's HP, right? Chapter 13.
Okay. Let me continue. So the system has such a behavior as I show you, but there is a different behavior as soon as the effective mass becomes infinite. In that case, there is a phase transition, which I'm going to explain how it takes place. As soon as effective mass becomes infinite, you see, then we can approximate it as, and XFC is a point at which the effective mass becomes infinite. Behind this point, we see that effective mass can be negative. It is not reasonable result. And therefore, to evaluate the quasi-particle distribution function, we have to use a standard equation to search the minimum value of the ground state energy. In the case, for instance, of Bose liquid, it is a usual equation. But in the case of Fermi liquid, normally Fermi liquid has its minimum value of the energy when NP is a step function, which in fact is but when the effective mass becomes infinite, let's try this equation. In this case, we should demand that the solution is a real solution only in the case if NP is smaller than unit and bigger than zero in some interval. And in fact, this solution can take place because the effective mass is infinite and the kinetic energy is frustrated. And the properties of the system are defined by the potential energy. And we have such a behavior. This is NP, quasi-particle distribution function. In case of normal Landau Fermi liquid theory, it is a step function. But in this case, the step function is smoothed out at the Fermi surface. And the corresponding single particle spectra is as follows. This part of spectra is flat, and this is epsilon p, and this is the chemical potential. It's obvious thing because, for instance, let us imagine that this part were not flat. In that case, let it be like this one. The distribution function is no longer one or unit. Therefore, we can move quasi-particle from this point to this one, and the energy will go down. But if it is a flat part and a single particle spectrum and display at this region is equal to chemical potential, only in this case we have a real ground state energy. Therefore, here the single particle spectrum must be flat. And we can introduce here an order parameter which characterizes this state as that is, in the case of a normal Landau liquid, it's always zero. But in our case, because of this condition, it's finite, this order parameter. And it is interesting to consider how this behavior can be considered from the point of view when we are dealing with finite temperatures. Because at finite temperatures, the distribution function is given by Fermi-Dirac distribution. That is
does this state have a finite entropy?
No, because in fact this is a superconducting parameter, and this system is captured by superconductivity with delta equal when the delta is extremely small. Therefore, it is a single state.
Why can't I use Landau's expression for the entropy of a quasi-particle system? S equals n log n plus 1 minus n log 1 minus n.
You mean expression for entropy, yes?
Into Landau's expression for the Landau's statement is that I can adiabatically turn on the interactions and I have a one-to-one correspondence of the states of the original system and the final system, which means that the entropy is an invariant.
Yeah.
And therefore, if once I know the occupancies of the quasi-quadratic states, I know the entropy of the Landau Fermi liquid. So can I? My question was, can I apply Landau's expression for the entropy to this state? And if so, why doesn't it have a zero-point entropy?
Yes, because at finite temperature, the entropy is finite, is given standard Landau equation. But when the temperature tends to zero, it also can be considered within the Landau Fermi liquid. But only one point, T equals zero, is excluded, because in this case, we are dealing with quantum phase transition. And
but it's more finite temperature.
At finite, yes, I'm
then
going to...
Then entropy will go to a constant as T goes to zero, because the expression for the entropy is N log N plus 1 minus N log 1 minus N times minus K Boltzmann. Right?
Yes.
And if N naught of P is neither 1 nor 0, that expression is finite at each momentum.
Yes.
And therefore it will have, as a limiting process, T goes to zero, a zero-point entropy, will it not?
And if we take into account this limit process, we can see that entropy is zero. For instance, imagine a superconducting state.
Talk about this state, not a superconductor.
Because the order parameter is typical for the superconducting state, and I will say about just a little later.
The superconductor breaks gauge invariance and all sorts of other considerations come into play there. None of us would claim that the equations of Landau theory applied to a superconductor. However, these equations were derived from Landau theory. This solution was derived from Landau theory. And so can I not use that formalism to calculate the free energy and hence the entropy?
Because there is a connection between Landau theory and BCS only because the delta is zero in this case. But the order parameter can be finite.
So what tells me that I cannot use the entropy expression from Landau Fermi liquid theory?
You can use at finite temperatures.
And take the limit that T goes to zero. I want to take the limit of entropy at T as T goes to zero. It's a well-defined limiting process. As I do that, my N naughts of P will go to a constant.
And therefore
I will have a zero-point entropy. Yes. What's wrong with that argument?
Generally speaking, if we would consider this is X, and this is XFC. When the system occupies this area, entropy is obviously zero.
What is X?
X, it is a concentration in this case. And mass is finite over this region. When the system is moved to this, there is a critical line. And entropy, in fact, has a jump when the temperature goes down, as it takes place in the case of if delta, I mean gap in spectrum, goes to zero and TC goes to zero, then at finite temperature the entropy is finite, but at zero temperature there is a jump in entropy, but it does not influence on other thermodynamical functions, because for instance free energy is proportional to T delta Q, and T tends to zero. But I will discuss just a little later this item.
So you're claiming that my calculation based on that, the logical structure is I use Landau theory derived this state. Okay? But you're telling me that I'm then not allowed to use Landau theory to derive the entropy.
No, it is possible, because I can consider the system at any time at finite temperature, irrelatively how low this temperature is.
Yes, that's right. So Landau's expression for entropy doesn't involve the temperature, only involves the occupancy N of P.
Okay.
You provide me N of P, therefore I can use that expression to provide you with the entropy.
Let me get
a finite answer. So what is wrong with that reasoning?
It's okay. I will show you. Let me consider this equation. We can rewrite this equation as follows.
So we have a hard copy at 11:30. So
we have about top 10 minutes all together.
Yeah.
Including this domain discussion.
I will try to. If we are dealing with this solution, in that case, NP at low temperatures don't tend to 1 or 0. In this case, logarithm log is finite. And when temperature tends to 0, we can omit this term, and as a result, we arrive at this equation. And because epsilon is given by this equation, and this is, we see that we come back to the same equation for this stuff.
But the entropy is an expression which involves the log.
Yes.
N log
exactly
n
Landau.
Plus 1 minus yes. N log yes. 1 minus yes. N. That is yes. Now no longer 0.
Yes.
It's so is the entropy finite in the ground state? If you say no, yes. Then you have to rederive it for me. Okay? You have to blackboard it.
Because we have to special procedure to calculate the entropy at the zero temperature. And therefore, obviously, there is a jump in, I can argue that there is a jump in entropy.
Between when, zero temperature and finite temperature.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So it's like a zero temperature first order phase transition.
Not first, it is a weak first order phase transition. It is a weak first order phase transition because all other thermodynamical functions are not.
But since the experimenters can't ever reach zero temperature, at any finite temperature, the entropy is finite, right?
Yes.
Okay. So for all practical purposes, it does have a zero entropy, right?
In that case,
the limit of T goes zero of entropy is finite, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to push you on this. I think it's true, right? I think you should come clean on it.
No. In fact, I can show that the entropy at zero temperature.
No, finite temperature, but small.
Finite, small, it's finite, of course.
Not just finite, but not going to zero, remaining constant.
Yes, it's finite.
Okay,
yes.
Then I'm happy. Good.
Not, but nonetheless, let's consider this stuff. And in that case, if we can see that the effective mass behaves at small temperatures as the reciprocal temperature. That is, this result directly follows from this equation. And now, and we can test this fact by experiments. In 1997, we predicted that such a behavior should lead to the fact that thermal expansion coefficient, which is in the normal Landau Fermi liquid theory, is proportional to temperature. In that case, obviously, this thermal expansion coefficient will be constant at low temperatures. And in fact, it was observed in ytterbium, ruthenium, and in heavy fermion metal. I will say a few words about this is behavior, which was observed exactly in accordance, and our formula is in accordance with this behavior, which was observed recently when people were measuring the thermal expansion coefficient. And
so
now
if I look at a T versus X diagram, so from all of this talk for the last hour, there are different regions of this T versus X. One region shows square root T divergence,
yes.
One region says 1 over T to the 2/3, and another region says 1 over T.
Yes.
So what does that look like? Can you sketch out a T versus X and then say where these various regions exist?
This is a point,
yep.
And here the M is behaves as But when system is located in this region with fermion condensation, therefore it is a critical line. When if we go down with temperature, then we observe that effective mass behave as reciprocal. Because all
it's like a quantum phase transition, there are lines, there are crossover lines emanating from XFC, where you cross over from some normal behavior to 1 over T. Have you guys calculated those things?
Yes, for instance, if the system near to this point, of course both critical indexes will be the same, but in this case we are dealing with a critical line, because at each point of this line, when the temperature goes down, the system behaves like this.
Yeah.
There's a difference. And I would like to say a few words about the entropy, because of course I agree it is a very important item. And in fact, there is a small attraction in between quasi-particles in each system. Therefore, let us consider this equation, BCS equation, which can be presented as follows. It's not very difficult. I only would like to clarify this item. And delta T is proportional to some constant V, and this is other parameter integrated over momentum. Let lambda tends to zero, then delta as well tends to zero. And in normal case, we have that epsilon equal mu at the Fermi surface, because simultaneously the order parameter also vanishes at this point. But if the order parameter does not vanish at this point, we come back again to the same equation. The spectrum must be flat. And if we introduce a tiny attractive interaction between quasi-particles, therefore the system becomes superconducting at extremely low temperatures. But if delta exactly zero, then we would have a jump in entropy.
But if it has a large macroscopic entropy, then it's going to be unstable to a gazillion possible instabilities.
Yes.
Not just superconducting.
Yes. I guess it could be observed in experiments. For instance, this behavior when thermal expansion coefficient is constant at temperature to zero, it's also show that the entropy must be finite. But of course system will be captured by superconducting or some other kind of phase transition, because it is a highly degenerated system. Obviously you have a huge density of states. And it is, yes, it is, therefore the system is unstable against a lot of phase transition, superconducting phase transition, then against of anti-ferromagnetic phase transition, and so on. Therefore, system will, I guess, would find its way to eliminate this huge entropy. But sometimes you can observe this behavior down to sufficiently low temperatures. And therefore, we can see that alpha does not depend on temperature at low temperatures. And the Grignard ratio, in fact, will be divergent at this point, because if we consider spectrum, it is a flat when temperature is equal to zero. But as soon as temperature finite, it behaves like this. And this the system in this case has a finite effective mass. But this part of this spectrum which contribute to the thermal expansion. It does not contribute to heat capacity. Its contribution is proportional to squared. This was shown by Nozier in early 19th. Therefore, we have two different behaviors. The heat capacity is defined by this part of spectrum, while the thermal expansion defined by this part of spectrum. And as a result, we have a divergence of Gruner's ratio, a real divergence in this case, because of thermodynamics. But obviously, as temperature will go down and down, at some moment, system should be captured by some kind of phase transition. And in fact, the Gruner's ratio becomes finite. But if we could imagine such a clean system without any superconductivity or ferromagnetic phase transition and so on, in that case, yes, the Gruner's ratio will be divergent and the entropy should have a jump.
I'm sorry, can you classify when x smaller than x, the critical effective mass becomes negative? That's what we mean by Fermion condensation, the effective mass.
Yes.
Becomes negative.
Negative. Instead of becoming negative, it gets its own solution instead. Yeah. Condensation. That's the point.
Okay.
He gets this other solution to prevent the effect of mass from going negative.
Oh, so that's.
Yes, it cannot be, yes, negative. Yes.
So that solution has zero temperature entropy.
If some other instability didn't take.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if the fermion condensation is absent, then the effective mass can be negative, in fact. But we have to use this equation in order to escape this negative effective mass and also to find the real ground state. But as usually, it is the question. If you see that there can be a phase transition, it is a big problem to understand what kind of phase transition system will choose behind this point. The only way you should try to figure out.
So your title fermion condensation means this is a special solution.
Yes.
Where x smaller than x.
Yes, yes. And the behavior of the effective mass like this.
Well, why you call it the fermion condensation?
Because all quasi-particles are pinned to chemical potential. All of them have the same energy. This is. Therefore, it is a condensation. They occupy the same level in energy. Of course, in momentum space, they are spread over a whole region because of statistics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The
world
thing. Very good.
Okay. Well, it's 11:30, which I think is a good time to stop.
Great.
So thank you very much. And how much longer will you be around?